Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. Our guest, Steve Mariotti, graduated from business school, won a prestigious scholarship, worked for Ford's legendary financial staff, and then quit to run his own business. But maybe the biggest influence on his life was getting mugged. After being hit up and roughed up for 10 bucks by some New York City tough kids, Steve Mariotti resolved to go to New York's rough neighborhoods and to teach. He landed in Bedford-Stuyvesant's Boys and Girls High School teaching math. It did not go well for Mr. Manicotti, as some of his students like to call him, until at wit's end he tried to sell his watch to one of his classes. The sales pitch caught his class's attention as nothing else had. They got interested in the math where money was concerned. He retooled his math curriculum to be all about business, and then he took it from Bedford-Stuyvesant to Fort Apache, to the Bronx and other schools in New York. In 1988, Steve Mariotti left the public schools to go public himself. He created a program called NIFTY, the National Foundation for Teaching Entrepreneurship, a program that has now taught more than 25,000 kids how to build their own businesses. We're talking this hour about using the profit motive to reach wayward kids. Steve Mariotti joins us in the studio. Also with us, one of NIFTY's graduates, Richard Futrell, who is now a college student, and also CEO and president of Futrell Promotions. Connection listeners, are business building skills what America's inner cities really need most? And could entrepreneurship balance out as the best solution to the problems of urban education? 1-800-423-8255 makes the connection, or 1-800-423-TALK. Steve Mariotti, I wish you'd just lay out the theory here, all that pie and all that sky, and then tell us how it's worked.
Well, we have 31,000 graduates now that have gone through our 100-hour program. It's a mini MBA aimed at children in poverty ages 13 to 20. And we're working with about 10,000 kids a year, and I think it's worked great. Brandeis did a 5-year study and showed that our graduates learn 20 times the amount of business knowledge than kids that don't go through our program. And our business rate formations are about 5 times higher than young people that don't go through our program.
Give us the short course, 100 hours in 100 seconds.
Pretty much marketing, sales, finance, record keeping. I think the most important thing is opportunity recognition, how to teach somebody to see an opportunity in the marketplace. We are real good at teaching people to write business plans and to contact venture capitalists. A young person really does everything you have to do to start a small business, from getting business cards to learning how to register it to doing posters and flyers. And within a year, each of our children will have a website on the Internet.
Give us an example.
I think my favorite young entrepreneur is Malik Armstead. Came out of our program in New York City and owns one of the top soul food restaurants in New York now, in Brooklyn on Myrtle Avenue. And just a wonderful young man, 27 years old, has employed 8 people that and is helping to reestablish the neighborhood. He actually owns the whole block now at the age of 27. He owns all 3 buildings. But we've got about 2,800 kids, we estimate, that are in some type of small business out of our 31,000 graduates.
What is the underlying hope here? I mean, do you think of this as the cure?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a portion of it. It's not equal to great schools or wonderful parents or, you know, spirituality or what have you. But I think it's a major breakthrough in the field of education. It's based on the premise that children in poverty have many of the characteristics of the great entrepreneurs. They have chutzpah, they're mentally strong, they're comfortable with ambiguity and risk, and they're eager to learn about ownership and money. And more our paradigm is being adopted by school districts around the country and overseas. We now have offices in India, Great Britain, Belgium, and Argentina. And I think it's a major breakthrough in education, but it's not a cure-all.
A major breakthrough is enough to get us started. Richard Futrell, how did you encounter this program, and what have you done in it?
In 1995, this program, I was in, I Have a Dream scholarship program, they paid for 7 students to go through NIFTY, you know. Before I can even conceive of the dot, I was labeled an at-risk youth. You know, just coming from the inner cities, I was labeled an at-risk youth. You know, I was at risk to murder someone, at risk to rob someone, at risk to drop out of school, or at risk to sell drugs because of just me growing up in the inner cities. No one really thought I was at risk to start my own company, at risk to go to college, and at risk to help change the way people look at at-risk inner city kids everywhere. So when I came to NIFI, I didn't really know much about the program. I thought it was another course, you know, they paid for it, you know. And I learned it was about making money and about ownership. What Nifty taught me was that, you know, being able to own something gives you a self-respect, you know, that you have. And when you respect yourself, other people respect you. And growing up in a city, it was really hard, you know, with no money to really gain respect and not to have respect, period.
How did that govern your learning, say, of marketing or sales or finance, all subjects I don't know anything about? How did you learn them?
How did I learn? Oh, well, Nifty has a real basic course that's easy to understand and give you the training, their models. Buy low, sell high, keep good records. They give you $50. They take you out. They teach you the principles of buying
Chris British, think Yiddish, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So they teach you the principles of marketing, going out, raising prices, negotiating. And they really work with you, even through the program and after, through graduate services.
Have you got a business card?
Yes.
What do you know about finance?
Finance? Like, yeah, what do you mean?
Well, I always wonder what people learn in finance courses, what that's all about. What do you say to the bank?
About economics, going in, trying to get loans and venture capitalists and gaining money to start your own company.
What do you know about sales?
About sales is key to any business, you know, to increase your sales. That's the goal of a business.
Obviously, you're a marketer.
Yes, very. Very much so.
What does Futrell Enterprises do for the world? What does
Futrell
it do for
promotions,
you?
We have low-cost inner-city events, parties, talent shows, fashion shows. We bring in for at-risk kids just to give them a safe place to go to have nice, good, clean fun.
You making money?
Yes, we definitely make money.
You a billionaire?
Not yet. A couple of years, like two, maybe.
How will you get there? How do you manage the money side of it, for example?
We have graduate service help us with lawyers and accountants to help keep our books, to keep good records is a motto within Nifty. So, you know, it's always important to keep a good record, keep receipts of the money you're spending, cash flow statements, where the money's going, you know, who's retaining the money. Is good to keep a bank account, checking account. That's what they teach you. They help you. They give you a bank account. Actually, when you first start, we all went to Bank Boston and set up our own bank accounts. So I had a bank account for like 6 years now.
Steve Mariotti's theory is that the kids that the society worries most about are, in fact, well-equipped in terms of risk-taking, in terms of, he said, comfort with ambiguity, mental toughness, are ready for this world. Is that your observation or not?
Yeah.
How ready are those kids, your pals?
I think inner city kids are really rare. You know, at a young age, drugs is a big thing within the inner cities. And, you know, the illegal drug business is a big business. It's like we have kids out there, 14, who are making like $2,000-$3,000 a week selling drugs, you know. And what Nifty does is they provide an alternative to selling drugs, you know, an alternative product. You know, they tell you that you can make money by tutoring, or you can go out and you can sell ice cream and make money and profit. And you don't only have these two products, which is crack and marijuana, you know, that people are marketing. They give you an alternative to what you can market and how to market and how to make it a marketable business.
But you're not making $2,000 a week in clean parties.
No, it's not, but it's legal. It's not something that you have to worry about one day you're going to get arrested from. You know, it's something, it's yours that you can call your own. It might not be a lot of money in it, but it's something positive. And it spreads, too. It's like my brother has just started his own record label, an independent record label. You know, after he seen me running for Trail Promotions, he was like, oh, you know, I can do this. You know, I can go out and I can take this risk because he sees somebody else within the community doing it. So it's like once the entrepreneurial spirit is sparked, it like lights candles in everybody, and it just brings a more cooperative economics within the inner cities.
What's your next venture when you're out of school and you're working at it full time? What is it, Richard Futrell?
I'm trying to start my entertainment company, which is Ice Rain Entertainment, which is going to be more of a a fashion model agency with a record company aspect involved. So it's going to be a big entertainment thing, sort of like a Russell Simmons, Puff Daddy sort of thing.
Steve Mariotti, first of all, I mean, do you have a hard time selling this idea in high school settings, for example? And then how does Richard Futrell graduate into the realm of real business?
I had a real hard time in the 80s promoting this idea, and was kind of viewed as an outcast in the educational system, I think. But the 90s, the last 10 years, has been a great acceptance of both Nifty and this idea. And I think we're in the middle of a boom in bringing entrepreneurial education, particularly to low-income youth. And I'm really, really excited about it. As far as how you take a small business person like Richard and take him to another level, we're struggling with that. And we have partnerships here in Boston. We've got an incredible relationship with Hill & Barlow that's doing legal work for our top graduates. We've founded a loan fund for our top graduates where kids can borrow, young people can borrow up to $6,000. And we've got good relationships with the SBA and SCORE. We're trying to partner and be able to guide our graduates to other organizations that specialize in different areas. And we have CPAs working with our graduates, but it's a real struggle. We have not figured that part out yet.
It's a tremendous time for startup ideas in the electronic world. Are you pushing internet business, and have you enlisted kids yet in that boom?
Absolutely. The 6 years ago, about 1% of our businesses that kids started were computer related. Last year, I think it was close to 14%. So we've had this boom in the interest in computers. And we have a partnership with Microsoft, which has been just wonderful for us. They've invested almost $4 million into Nifty to put our curriculum online in this incredible site that kids can access anywhere in the world, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, to learn how to start a small business. We're going to try to get 1 million kids online, low-income children online, by the year 2005.
Richard Futrell, what's your internet connection? And do you have a website?
Yes, I'm in the process now of developing www.futrellpromotions.com. It's going to be a site that inner-city kids can go on and find out community events, whether for-profit or non-profit events, different resources that are available in the community, like Computers Lab that they can use at the Urban League, that I've been working with the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts.
Do you have internet dreams? I mean, can you see...
Oh, definitely. That's where the millions is at in the internet. I would love to start an e-commerce business that blows up and make $1 million or $2 million. Then I can go back and donate half of it back to Nifty.
Only half?
What kind of a business would it be? What would the Futrell dream?
It would be selling mainly hip-hop apparel, you know, maybe online clothing store, hip-hop apparel and music for, like, new independent artists, you know, selling independent artists' music over the web. People who can't get distribution from big record labels, but can do it more on a smaller level.
Interesting. We're talking about enterprise as a way up and out. 1-800-423-8255. A 1-800-423-TALK with Richard Futrell of Futrell Promotions and Steve Mariotti, who's written a big book on the subject called The Young Entrepreneur's Guide to Starting and Running a Business. 1-800-423-TALK. Chris is on the line.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Chris.
I am fascinated because I'm actually a student teacher here in Boston. And one question that I have is, first off, I'd like to say to Richard, I am so impressed with you. What I'd like to ask both of you is, how do you keep the human element in all of this? In the sense that we live in a society that tends to reduce everything to money. And not every startup company is going to be successful for these young kids. And how do you give them the internal resources so that they know they're not a failure, that there are other factors if they don't become a millionaire?
Okay, when we learn about business, they know that, they teach us at Nifty that business is a risk, that, you know, sometimes you have to fail before you succeed, that that if even if you fail, your failure is not really a failure because it's a success because you learn from your failures. So that's what we learn in business. And I just think by young people starting a business, it gives them a human alien because sometimes in the inner cities can be very inhumane, you know, when you don't own anything. And it's like you living in poverty and you don't really have a respect for yourself, but then you own something and it gives you a self-respect and it makes you really feel like a human being again.
Fabulous. What would you say to a teacher who isn't in NIFTY, who, say, teaches science? Anything that you've learned that you could apply in a bigger context that maybe I could take away and help give my kids?
Yeah, just really, for me, it was just really teachers listening to me, you know, what I have to do, you know, giving that the aspect where, like, what you're teaching in a classroom, how they can take it home and how they can utilize it, giving that concept to them, you know, not just giving it in, oh, this is maybe later on in life you're going to use it, but how you can use it at home, basically.
Chris, you should hear Steve Mariotti's story about his watch. I mean, how did you learn, Steve, to get the attention of the kids you were teaching in public school?
Well, I think science is an incredible place to integrate economics and business and entrepreneurship because so much of entrepreneurship is trying to find a product. And so many great entrepreneurs have been scientists or at least had a partnership with a scientist. So I know teachers all across the country that are both science teachers and NIFTY teachers, and I'd be glad to hook you up with them. But for me, I started off as a special ed math teacher and an English teacher, and just found that by integrating concepts of ownership and business that it provided a concrete incentive for children to learn basic skills. I was fascinated, by the way, by your issue of values, and I just want you to know that one of our mottos is wealth is thoughts, not things.
Mm-hmm.
And I always try to de-emphasize money and to say that you're trying to have a good life and you're trying to have control over your life and to help your community and neighborhood. To me, one of the most political acts, positive political acts one can do from a social enterprise viewpoint is to actually start a business, particularly in a low-income community. So the money is a tool to do good, and I don't think it's an end in itself, and I really appreciate you identifying that issue.
Well, thank you so much, and please be sure to give the NIFTY website so I can check it out.
Great. It's www.nfte.com.
Well, thank you so much. The best to both of you. And I'm going to check it out and think about ways to integrate that in my science classroom.
I appreciate it.
Chris, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
1-800-423-8255. The business enterprise connection. 1-800-423-TALK. Hakeem is on the line.
How are you?
Good, Hakeem. Thanks for calling.
All right. I'm calling. I used to be a NIFTY student myself. I graduated in 1994. I'm now running a business called Butter Garments.
Butter Garments.
That's right, Butter Garments,
okay.
B-U-T-T-A-H.
How you doing, Hakeem? It's Steve Mariotti.
How you doing? Pretty good. Hello, Richard.
What's up, Hakeem?
What's up? All right.
Tell us your story, Hakeem. How'd you get in? What'd you learn? What are you doing?
All right, well, I got into the NIFTY program through Thompson's Island Education, which was a summer program and after-school program that I was in 1990. I graduated in 1991. And Desiree Mondon was working in the after school at the same time he was a student with NIFTY, so they kind of brought them together and they became allies. So Julie Shalard, who's now in D.C. teaching the program, taught a workshop in the Thompson Island Education. They brought me in as like a volunteer peer model for everyone else because I was a little bit older than everybody else. But at the same time, I went through the course and took in the curriculum and graduated with the rest of the class, and now I have my own business.
What was the most important thing you learned from NIFTY?
Independence. How to take my money. It's just basically like Richard said, you know, buy low and sell high. And basically, see, NIFTY is a good place. It's resources and information. And that's what I think a lot of the inner city communities lack, or low-income communities lack. One of the reasons why rich people do stay rich and prosperous, and economically at least, is because they have resources around them constantly. And that presence in itself, resources and information and how to go out and do things and where to go and who to meet and how to set up business plans set you on the right track. And I took that with me when I started up my business, Butter Garments, again this fall.
What resources did you find, Hakeem, that you had but hadn't known the value of?
Well, I didn't know actually how easy it was. I really didn't know how, and I think that's the problem with a lot of people. They don't know how. I mean, it's hard and it's an obstacle to keep and maintain, but to start up, and once you get that momentum flowing, you know, everything seems to prevail and go according. But I didn't know how easy it was, you know, that I can go to City Hall, I can get a business certificate, pay $25, set up a business, copyright a title or a name or a logo. I can go to the wholesale district in Manhattan because they take us on a trip. They take everybody on a trip, two trips during the course into New York downtown, and they show you the wholesale district and things of that nature and, you know, let you see how to make some money.
And then what was your business plan? Can you summarize it?
My business plan, well, right now I'm working out of my home, but I plan to one day set up, well, in the near future, hopefully, to set up a storefront. And with that, you know, I'd also like, because I've always been a pretty community-oriented person, I go to school, I study education, and I want to do, like, outreach programs in the community, just teaching things. And inside my storefront, hopefully, I'd like to set up a place for an after-school where people can come in and get some of the same resources I had, you know, with the internet, access to the internet and the nifty books and things of that nature, so they can learn how to set up their own business as well, maybe even run some nifty workshops out of my storefront. And with that, you know, I like to basically set up a franchise.
Hakeem, you should go through our teacher training at Babson.
I'm working with Margaret.
Oh, cool. Okay, great. That's great. I'm really impressed.
Yeah, I plan to. I definitely like to teach the curriculum. I definitely, because I have a lot of respect for Nifty. I do have a lot of respect. There's a lot of opportunity, a lot of great opportunity, because when you get into Nifty, you get into a certain circle of people who are thinking the same way. And they were on the same exact pace. Like, I met Richard yesterday. I hadn't known him, but Nifty brought us together. And there might be different places that we can meet. You know, he does promotions. So I might come to him one day and present him my business and ask him for advice and how to promote my business. And he might make up some flyers, help me with that, help me to set up a website and things of that nature. So it brings us all together as one.
If you merge with Richard, we want to get a finder's fee here for the connection. Hakeem, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot.
And good luck. Keep us posted.
Bye-bye.
1-800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking about Nifty, among other things, the National Foundation for Teaching Entrepreneurship, with Steve Mariotti, who got it started, and Richard Futrell, who took the course and went into business as a result. 1-800-423-8255. Valerie is on a car phone.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to mention some work Nifty does with a group I'm involved with here in Boston called Partners for Youth with Disabilities. Partners actually buys the Nifty program and teaches kids with disabilities in Boston and the surrounding communities how to start their own businesses. They call it the Young Entrepreneurs Program. Nifty's been very helpful with Partners working together for a part of the society we don't really see, kids with disabilities, and it makes a huge difference in their lives. I'm wondering, does Nifty work with other groups in the country that services disabled kids like Partners does?
Yes, we do. We work with Bill Corbett at the Cooperative Productions, which is for people that have been have real, real severe disabilities. And as you know, one of your graduates won our national award this year. Did you know that, Valerie?
Yeah, I just had lunch with Regina and saw that. Your awards ceremony in New York is quite spectacular and has some great support for it, obviously.
Thank you. I appreciate it. We had 1,000 people there this year.
Yeah, you raised quite a bit of money, if I remember.
Yes, we did. It was very successful. Thanks.
Valerie, I'm just curious, what kinds of disabilities are you talking about?
Kids with multiple dystrophy, spina bifida, wheelchair-bound kids, some learning disabilities, but by and large, it's physical disabilities.
Okay.
And it's kids from 5 to, you know, 18, and they get to a chance to partner with disabled grown-ups. That's a piece of the group, but also they have this Young Entrepreneurs Program, and I think the girl who won the award this year at the Nifty event has a store right in her home.
Yes, that's true. It's a beautiful story, and she's wheelchair-bound, and she's just incredible. It's an incredible program Regina's got.
Right. So I just wanted to bring that up. I think you do great work.
I appreciate it, Valerie. Thanks for calling.
Valerie, thank you. Could I just ask you, Steve, and Richard, The line that it is not about greed, it's not even deep down basically about money, is a theme that came up in a program we did a week or two ago about sort of the new business models. And several of the sort of dot-com kids who are in a certain way betting their nickel on a, you know, hoping to have a gusher, also said it's not, strangely enough, about money. Do you believe that, Richard? Or, I mean, is it or ain't it? When you do you have dollar signs in your head all the time, or is it about something else, perhaps?
It's not about money. Like it said earlier, it's about independence. It's about owning something, you know, you being in control, being your own boss, you know, being able to create something. You know, as people, I think we are all creative artists in our own way. And it's like you want to create something and you want to see it grow and you want to see it prosper. You know, money is just, you know, what you reap from watching it grow, watching that thing that you made grow. And it's always good to make money from it, but it's about being independent and being able to manage something yourself.
Would you consider working for a big company? I mean, that's another way to a good life for a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely. I would definitely consider working for a big corporation or something like that. But I always want to have that independence, you know, to say, you know, I created this with Trail Promotion. You know, that's mine. You know, it makes me feel good to own something and to have something that I can call my own.
And maybe Futrell Promotions will be a big business any day now. Who knows? 1-800-423-8255 makes the connection from WBUR Boston. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. We're talking about entrepreneurship as a way out of ghetto isolation into middle-class American prosperity and independence. 1-800-423-8255 makes The Connection. Steve Mariotti began the National Foundation for Teaching Entrepreneurship. He's had, by now, he says, 31,000 graduates. One of them, Richard Futrell, is our guest, too. Steve, would you just define, you say it's not strictly about money, it's about independence and every kind of adulthood responsibility. What is the definition of victory as you see it? As you look over your graduates and as you look over sort of the job to be done, what defines a winner, a success for you?
Well, first of all, I've never seen anybody make a lot of money who was motivated by making money. It's almost counterintuitive that I think you have to follow your heart and find something you love to do and believe in it, and the money will come from that. For me, success is, did we add options to a person's life? I think one of the great tragedies in our society, and certainly it's worse overseas, as I'm learning, is that many, many people that would be very good in self-employment situations are taught and are culturally indoctrinated into thinking that they have to work in a particular job or situation that's very stressful to them. There are millions of people that are in the welfare system that I think would make great entrepreneurs. And there are a lot of people that work for people that don't like them or have a boss that's abusive or what have you, that I think could step out of that hierarchy, sell back in, and totally change their life and learn how to do it in a very short period of time.
1-800-423-8255 makes the enterprise connection. Enterprise specifically as a way out of ghetto poverty. 1-800-423-TALK. Darren is on the line.
Yes, I'm very impressed with what I've heard so far. I was compelled to call because...
Thank you, Darren.
I'm from a community that could really use a program like this. I'm from East St. Louis, Illinois. I don't know if either of you...
I'm familiar with East St. Louis, Darren.
The world Miles Davis, right?
That's right.
It's certainly one of the... It's a very intense community. I've actually been there and have tried to start a nifty program there. Thanks
you
for
have.
Calling. Yeah.
Really? Interesting. I'd be curious to find out what the feedback was?
We had a lot of interest, and I think my attention got diverted up to Chicago, where we started a very successful program. But I'm very interested in St. Louis. At one time, I think you had the highest murder rate in the country.
Absolutely.
And it's an interesting community, a lot of great people, but a lot of pain.
That's right.
Define the need, Darren, and also sort of kick the tires of this idea. I mean, are young kids who get offered entrepreneurship? I mean, you want to cross-examine this snake oil here?
Well, basically, it's just community in need. I'll give you an example. My mother's home was burglarized recently, and it's just a situation that's just seems to be getting worse and worse. The youth have really no direction, and the few of us that are able to get out, I mean, there are that much many. There are like 100 more that and never make it out. So I was just hoping that there might be some way for you to incorporate your program there.
Thank you, Darren. I appreciate it. And I definitely
would it work, Darren? Is that what kids need?
Oh, I think anything positive such as this would have, even if it saved one, I think it would be well worth the effort.
What would be the sales pitch to a kid on the street in East St. Louis?
Oh, God, I don't know. It's been a while since I've been there, so I really wouldn't have.
We'll send Richard and Steve and let them preach it. Darren, thank you. 1-800-423-8255. Martin is on the line.
Yes, hello.
Welcome, Martin.
Hey, you had mentioned a second ago, what would be the sales pitch to a kid in the inner city?
Let's hear it.
Who would be interested in entrepreneurship? I myself am a young software developer, actually in the Dorchester area of Boston, who works for a 100% black-owned and operated software development company, InnerCity.com. With 1 year of college, I've learned none of the skills that I currently employ in college, actually. But with 1 year of college and a year or so of training, the skills I now have, I could take and go get a job that would pay between $100,000 and $120,000 annually, which is significant. Essentially with a high school diploma, it is possible to live a very decent sort of lifestyle. And I would say that, that is very relevant.
What does software.com do, Martin?
InnerCity.com.
InnerCity.com.
We build web-oriented databases for companies. And, in fact, we have done some work for WBUR recently.
Wow.
So
you must be good, man.
Yeah, we do pretty good work. And so, I definitely wanted to call and commend you guys on your efforts and say that, yes, definitely, please keep up the good work. And even potentially offer ourselves up for some sort of partnership, as I think there might be a lot of synergy in what we both do. Certainly, our efforts are working in the inner city or, bringing technical know-how to the inner city.
Yeah, I'm very interested. I'd love to talk to you further. I appreciate you calling in.
Do we know how to find you, Martin?
Yes, actually. Once again, InnerCity.com is the domain, and actually our founder, Ken Granderson, grew up in the Bedford-Stuyvesant area of New York.
Oh, yeah? Did he go to Boys and Girls High School?
He might have beat up Steve Marotti once upon a time.
No.
And actually, he had asked me to just call in and, just definitely express our interest in what it is that you do. I myself grew up in inner-city Boston, and, I can't overemphasize how important it was at a very young age that I was exposed to people in the entrepreneurial area. As a youth, it definitely would have been possible to go, either way. And having been exposed to Ken, InnerCity's founder, when I was 16, showed me that there were a lot of options in what you can do. And I truly believe that entrepreneurship is the key to the future of the inner city. It will be important going forward that more of us are entrepreneurs more so than employees. And I also can't overemphasize the importance of technology for the inner city, as the internet is the most significant force for leveling the playing field, quote unquote, that we've ever had.
Yeah, I think
Richard Coutreau.
I think more of the hip hop industry is really fueling like the entrepreneurship thing. Mm-hmm. People like Master P, who have started their own record label and have artists out there, who's just got his own. He has his own agency. What you call that? travel agency. He has his own, what else does he own? He own everything. He has four different businesses, Master P. Then you got Puff Daddy, who has his own clothing line, who has his own hip-hop industry, who has his own magazine. And kids, these are people that kids look up to. You know, they look up to these rappers and these entertainment artists, and they see they having their own business. So it's like Nifty now. There's a want. You know, before there was a need for it. Now people want to know how to start their own business. They want to know how to have their own clothing lines. You know, so it changed from a need to a want. You know, within this new millennium of the hip hop industry growing and expanding.
Martin, I want to ask you. You speak of a skills and sort of a job base that would command $100,000 on the market if you wanted to work for somebody else. You're happier developing your own thing. Speak to that point. Why put independence in your future ahead of the good old value of just getting a job?
Okay, well, you know, once again, while it is possible to command a pretty decent salary, it is just that, salary, and a lot of times the opportunity for growth can be limited, you know, based on the goals of the company you happen to work for. When it's your company, I also didn't mention that I am actually a partner in the company that I work for, which, I think is important. When it's your company, you can decide the direction. You can decide the interest of the company. And I heard it said earlier that most people who are rich weren't in it for the money. I think that is very true. However, I think there's no opportunity for becoming wealthy like owning your own business.
Interesting. Martin, good luck, and thank you very much for calling The Connection. 1-800-423-8255. Nancy is on a car phone.
Hi.
Hello, Nancy.
Hi there. I was just calling to inquire. It's a question that I've thought about a lot, and today's subject really provoked me to think about it a little more. Your previous caller was talking about the level of his education and where, you know, he stopped and learned some things but got more practical knowledge and got onto this internet business without the benefit of a college education. And I was just thinking and wondering whether or not a college education is going to have some element of obsolescence. And I know the leveling was mentioned, but, you know, whether or not it's going to sort of change the economies a little bit insofar as what the value of a college education is and what it costs and all of that. And it, of course, would benefit this crew of people. And I'll take my comment off the line.
Nancy, thank you. Steve Mariotti.
Well, I've actually found the opposite. I found that that kids today that get involved in small business are much more likely to go on and study further. And I think the value of education, I define that by reading and discussions and writing and not necessarily the degree or the accreditation of it, but I think the value of education in our society is going to increase geometrically, astronomically. I'm a big fan of kids staying in school as long as they possibly can and doing business on a part-time basis until they're in their mid-20s or even older.
Mm-hmm. Nancy, thank you. Do you want to add to that? Richard, you're in school and you've got your business.
Yes, I'm in college full-time and I do my business part-time, and I plan to continue doing that until I get my degree.
You handed your business card on campus, I'll bet.
Yes, all the time. Everybody has my business card.
Don't forget to leave me one.
Okay, definitely.
1-800-423-8255, the Enterprise Connection. Bob is calling from Bettendorf, Iowa.
Hello.
Welcome, Bob.
I think it's very commendable what you're doing, but I have a couple questions. I think you're working at a disadvantage with the legal environment in this country. For example, this attack on Microsoft does not set a very good example. What do you say to a young budding software entrepreneur who says, well, if I become really successful, is the government going to attack me?
I'm glad you called in. First of all, we're starting a major program in Iowa. Our partner is the University of Iowa, and we're beginning actually May 1st. I'm coming out there for a week looking for somebody to run the program. And second, I'm glad you raised that issue. In my field, getting low-income people, particularly in urban areas, to start small businesses, the biggest impediment has been the tax code, which is very, very difficult to understand and to teach. It's really a tragedy, and it's made many wonderful people into, like, almost themselves criminals because they can't figure out how to actually navigate the tax code, and it's really a negative thing. Also, there are so many laws on the books which I think are there to prevent competition from low-income people. And so I'm a huge advocate of trying to simplify the tax code and deregulate the economy, particularly in low-income communities, to allow lower-income people to enter the free enterprise system.
Bob, does that deal with it?
Go ahead.
No, I say, does that answer your question?
Well, I have one slight comment, small comment here. You mirror almost exactly my thinking on this. I think we need some kind of a threshold law that if a business is below a certain threshold, they can be excused certain filing requirements with the taxes. And it's not the amount of taxes. It's the complication of filling out the forms. And in particular, to hire somebody. I know lots of little entrepreneurs who will not hire somebody because of the additional responsibilities of filling out the forms for payroll taxes.
I totally agree with you, but I think that it should be equal for everybody. I mean, Chrysler Corporation, I think, has a 38,000-page tax return, and if I remember correctly, pays close to $70 million of internal costs to do it. So I think we should try to simplify across the board, and not just for small business, but I think we live in a much better society the easier we make it for people to start businesses and to maintain their business.
Bob, thank you. 1-800-423-8255. Jessica is on the line.
Hello?
Hello, Jessica.
Hold on, sorry about that. I'm actually interested a lot in the whole independence is not all for the money thing, almost to the opposite of what the last caller said, because it seems to me like what I'm wondering about is how are you teaching these kids to go and to work in a world where there's so many big companies like Microsoft that seem to want nothing more than to, like, keep other businesses out of the picture, and more so in other countries than in here, but it seems like, maybe I'm being cynical, but it seems like a lot of big companies want to keep a lot of people poor to be their workers, and I'm wondering how you're, like, encouraging them to stay independent, or are you encouraging them, rather than to stay independent, to, like, first chance they get to join a big corporation, and I will take my answer off the air.
Jessica, thank you. Steve Mariotti.
Yeah, Jessica, I look at it differently. I've found my own experience has been one person's success, when a company becomes very large like Microsoft, they actually create so much wealth for so many people. Microsoft has helped so many small companies grow and thrive. The whole Microsoft Solution Provider program, there's literally thousands of small software companies that have made millions and millions of dollars because of Microsoft's success. I would have to say Microsoft and other companies like them, Ford and all these huge success stories of this century, have actually helped the small business community. So I look at it the exact opposite.
Jessica, thank you. 1-800-423-8255 joins the Enterprise Connection. Ramona is on the line.
Yes, hello. I'm definitely impressed with this whole concept, and I think that Americans are very ingenious at solving problems, but I'm not sure if it's great that inner city kids are going to become the owners of their own businesses, but my worry is that every time you go to pick something up in a store, it's made in China. As I was in China for 6.5 months. I was in factories. I watched people working at slave wages. How can people in this country, even if they start their own businesses, one out of 10,000 people has a business, what are those other 10,000 people going to do? Sell hamburgers, dance, and, I mean, clothes and music and, you know, hip-hop music and all that? We just can't be entertained. That we need some production. And I know that in terms of high-tech stuff, sure, millions of dollars worth of stuff gets sold to China and we make it here, but billions of dollars are going into China. So I'm a little bit worried that we may be treating the symptoms but not the core problem. And one of my favorite things to go back to is Roger and Me, the movie Roger and Me.
I'm from Flint, by the way.
Well,
so I knew most of the people actually in that film.
Well, that film, I think, is profound.
But Ramona, I want to put the question to Richard. You're talking about promotions and hip-hop music, social connections. Do you think also of production, making things, doing the kind of work that, as Ramona says, is now all of our clothes are made someplace else?
Yeah, definitely. We're trying to get, it's a fashion designer right in Boston, Antonio Insoldi. Everything that he does is made right here in Boston. He's getting big. He just got a deal with the new Shaft movie that's coming out. He did all the leather apparel for them, and they're right on Newberry Street. This is somebody that came out of Dorchester. He has a boutique on Newberry Street that sells custom-made leather apparel, and this is Antonio Insoldi, and they're right out of Boston. They're doing stuff. He's making it. He's importing it from all over, international, bringing the fabrics in, but it's being made right here in America, American-made and done by an American. And I don't think it's about production, because production's happening, and the more people that know about entrepreneurship, we can change that 1 in 10,000 people that own businesses, so it'll be more like 5,000 people that own businesses. And as it grows, we can produce more here, because we have more companies to produce it.
Okay.
It's actually about 7 in 100 adults own a business. It's about 1 in 12.
Ramona, thank you. 1-800-423-8255. Lena is on the line.
Hi there. Our company, Applied PC, has hosted Nifty interns, summer interns, for a couple of years now. So we've worked with a few of them closely. And we're a high-tech company in Boston and actually got introduced to Nifty through Microsoft. I guess I agree with Mr. Mariotti very much in the sense that a lot of the kids that we've met have really the internal resources to start their own companies and a lot of personal responsibility. But I think that developing skills and ideas, say, in the high-tech industry takes a long-term commitment. It doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen in a summer. It takes setting up sustainable partnerships and mentoring relationships, and I would say within the private sector, so that these kids really can build up confidence, which they really, really need to succeed in the greater professional world. I also think that that the goal should be to get them to school, to get them to at least a four-year degree, and they need help in that sense. And so I think that I'm definitely a proponent of trying to get the private sector more involved and cultivating internal company cultures that really see themselves as having a responsibility here. And again, this is not something that happens overnight. I'm sure a lot of them can do it overnight, but for the most part, I think these are long-term relationships that we have to develop with kids, and that's what I would say.
I totally agree with everything you said. I'm aware of our partnership with you, and I'm delighted that you called in. I really appreciate the internship program.
Lena, thank you. Sarah is on the line.
Hi there. There's a group called Dead Prez, and they sing a song called Hip Hop, and they have a line that goes, "Would you rather have a Lexus or justice, a dream or some substance, a beam or a necklace or freedom?" And I know that you've been talking about how this program gives you...
We'll take one of each, Sarah. Go ahead.
So basically, how do you see, your independence and... related to this quote, what do you think about this quote? Sort of a criticism of the hip-hop industry being more about money than about seeking freedom and justice and independence. So it seems that the program is all about independence. Can you just kind of talk about that a little bit?
Richard Futrell.
Yes, definitely. Nifty is about teaching entrepreneurship, the hip-hop industry. Some artists, very few have been glamorizing money and throwing diamonds and platinum all on their videos and on their shows, and people have sort of hip-hop is bigger underground than it is commercial. A lot of people take commercial hip-hop for what it is, to be about money, women, all that stuff, but hip-hop is real deep, and it's about changing. Like when Run DMC and them and Public Enemy started Fight the Power back in 1989, it was about fighting against the injustices that happened within the inner cities. So what hip-hop is doing now is transforming from just being about words and about big companies making money off these inner city kids going out there rapping. Now the people who are rapping are owning what they write. They have the rights to their own music. They have their own record companies, and they can go back to the community and give other people that same thing.
Richard Futrell, I want your business card, and I want to meet you again.
Okay.
Steve Mariotti, thanks enormously for the book and for Nifty. We had help today from Michael Garth, John Marston, Rebecca Smuckler, Tim Monroe, Allison Bagg, and Kim Bichari. Our website is theconnection.org. Our website producer is Jim Norris. The Connection is produced by the enterprising Catherine Bidwell, Hitesh Hattie, John Holt, Jill Kaufman, Amy McShields and Keith Shields, Amy McDonald and Keith Shields. Mary McGrath is our chief of all enterprises. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation.
PRI, Public Radio International.
This is WBUR. Coming up on Here and Now at Noon, in addition to the news, the history of Boston's devastating fires, from the Great Fire of 1711 to the Hotel Vendome.